This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Soul Stories, written and read by Gary Zukav. Dedication to my daughter Jennifer and my granddaughter Jamie, with love and wonder.
Hello, I'm Gary Zukav. It's an honor to be with you. This is an audiobook of true stories. Sometimes I have used the real names of the people in them, and sometimes I have used other names. Sometimes I have told the story exactly the way it happened, and sometimes I have combined stories into one. Sometimes the stories are not about things that actually happened, but those stories are true, too. The Lakota people, who are Native Americans, have a story about the white buffalo calf woman. She is the one who gave them their sacred pipe. A reporter asked a Lakota elder one day if he thought that the story of the white buffalo calf woman was true. The elder said, "I don't know whether it actually happened that way or not, but you can see for yourself that it's true." You can see for yourself that all of the stories in this book are true, too. You have to look inside yourself to do that. Every soul story, whether you find it in this audiobook or somewhere else, requires that you look inside yourself to see if it's true. You may find that something that is true for someone else is not true for you. You might also find that something that is true for you is not true for someone else. That is the way that it is with soul stories. For example, some people say that the universe is dead. They call it inert, and that everything that happens is accidental. They say random. Other people, like me, say that the universe is alive, wise, and compassionate. Looking at the universe as dead is one story. Looking at it as alive is another. Which story is true for you? You have to decide. Each of the soul stories in this audiobook gives you an opportunity to decide whether it is true for you or not. The Lakota elder said that you can see for yourself when a story is true, but before you can do that, you have to know about it. That means thinking about it and, even more important, discovering what you feel about it. Eventually, you might find that what you feel about a soul story is more important to you than what you think about it. You can listen to all of the soul stories in a few days, or you can choose one here and there when you feel like it. Since there are 52 of them, you can also listen to one each week to give yourself a little more time to consider each one. That way, you will be thinking about soul stories for an entire year. Even if you listen to them all the first day, you can still listen to them again, one each week, to give yourself a little more time with each story. I love soul stories. For me, every story that makes me appreciate myself and you, and that makes me happy that we are together, even when things get very difficult, is a soul story. Every story that makes me appreciate the earth and look at it as a great friend is a soul story too. I'm happy to share these soul stories with you. Part 1. What's New? Multisensory Perception. It was a gray winter afternoon. The black, sleek car was traveling 50 miles an hour when it hit the ice. Like a graceful dancer, it began a slow, horizontal pirouette as it slid toward a steep embankment and then disappeared over it. Inside, a young woman screamed as the car rolled again and again like a ball careening downward and spinning at the same time. That woman was my sister. 100 miles away, an older woman with gray hair suddenly rose out of her chair. "Something has happened to Gail," she gasped. The telephone rang 40 minutes later. "Your daughter has been in an accident. She is not hurt badly, but her car was destroyed." How could this have happened? The woman who rose in alarm, my mother, could not see her daughter struggling for her life as the car crashed again and again against the frozen ground and at last into a barren tree. She could not smell the crushed bushes beneath the battered car or the gasoline from the ruptured tank. She could not hear the bending of metal and the shattering of glass, feel the impact of the car as it tumbled, or taste the blood in her daughter's mouth. She did not have to. She used multisensory perception. Multisensory perception is a direct link with information that the five senses cannot provide. It eliminates the distance between the one who knows and what she knows. It eliminates the time between them. My mother did not need to wait for the police to tell her that her daughter's life had been in danger. She knew it as clearly as if she had watched, heard, smelled, felt, and tasted the experience herself. She engaged another way of knowing. The businessman was late for his plane. He waited impatiently for his ticket and then drove quickly into the huge airport garage. The first level was full. So was the second. Up and up he spiraled, one narrow ramp after the other, becoming more worried each moment. Level 3 was full, and so was level 4. As he approached the ramp to the last level, desperate now, he suddenly stopped. A large sedan came speeding around the curve, going the wrong way. Neither would have seen the other before the crash. How did he know that car was coming? He could not see it, hear it, or smell it. His ability to taste and touch could not help him. This is also an example of multisensory perception. Multi means more than one. Taste, touch, smell, hearing, and sight are different ways of sensing, but they are all part of a single system. That system is designed to detect one thing, the world that appears to be outside of you. If you only have five senses to navigate, you are limited to this system. When the brochure first came in the mail, the woman did not give it much attention. It was about a conference that was too far away, too expensive, and not about the things that were most interesting to her. The next day, she felt an impulse to read it again, and the next day, too. She could not put it out of her mind, nor the curious feeling that she should attend. Without knowing why, she registered and booked a flight. The first day there, she met a man who was struggling with cancer. She had a passionate interest in the healing process. With her assistance, his cancer disappeared, and they co-authored a book on healing. Where did her impulse come from? She had two systems to provide her with information. The first, her five senses, didn't give her information about what might happen at the conference. Another system did. That second system is multisensory perception. My friend Jeffrey had come to a dead end. He wanted to study, quote, deviant personalities from a positive point of view, what makes some people more fulfilled and happy than others. His graduate program in criminology only studied them from a negative point of view, what makes some people more violent than others. One night, he dreamed that he visited the house of two friends, whom he actually knew. They were not home, so he let himself in. On a table in the living room, he found a magazine called I. It told him exactly what he needed to know. The next morning, he hurried to tell his friends about this dream. They weren't home. He knew where they kept the key, so he let himself in, although he'd never done that before. On a table in the living room, he found a magazine called Focus, which included a schedule of programs on a national public television station. As he looked through it, he suddenly realized that he could study positive, quote, deviant personalities by interviewing them on television. He did just that. He called his program Thinking Aloud. Jeffrey's dream told him how to find what he needed. So did the woman's impulse to go to the conference. The businessman's hunch told him what he needed to avoid. These are examples of multisensory perception. Jeffrey, the woman, and the businessman listened to their multisensory perception. That is why Jeffrey has his television program, The woman is the co-author of a book, and the businessman stayed out of the hospital. Having multisensory perception and using it to help you are different things. This is important to realize because we are all becoming multisensory. If you understand that, you will be looking for ways to use this ability. Actually, this ability is not new. What is new is that everyone is now getting it. In the past, we called this ability by another name. Intuition. Have you ever been thinking about a friend when the phone rings? "I was just thinking of you," you exclaim. "What a coincidence!" The word coincidence means that two events happen at the same time, like you're thinking about your friend and your friend's call. When this happens, it is never an accident. Your friend and you are connected in ways that your eyes, ears, nose, skin, and tongue cannot show you, but that your intuition did. Have you ever had a feeling you shouldn't do something and then did it anyway? "I knew I shouldn't have trusted him," you say. That's right. You knew. Your intuition told you. But you wanted so much to trust that you ignored what it told you. Multisensory perception and intuition are the same thing, but multisensory perception is a more accurate name. Most people think that intuition is a hunch that occurs now and then, like the one the businessman had to stop his car, and the feeling the woman got about the conference. It's more than that. It is a very sophisticated system that allows you to see more than you can with your five senses. As we become more and more intuitive, and we all are, we encounter different kinds of these experiences. Libby was my favorite grandmother. I loved to visit her when I was little. She had twin beds that folded out from the same sofa. We talked late every night, she lying on one bed and I on the other. There was a restaurant in Grandmother Libby's building, and after dinner, we would walk through the lobby hand in hand. Each time she met a friend, she would say, "This is my grandson. You remember him, don't you?" I was terribly embarrassed when she did this, but if I objected, which I always did, she would jerk my hand downward and say, "Shush!" I was in college when she died. A lot of people came to her funeral. When the rabbi gave her eulogy, I watched him from an alcove to his left. A small television hung from the ceiling. This gave us a frontal view of the rabbi. Seeing Grandmother Libby's funeral on television was so bizarre to me that I started to laugh. Suddenly, I felt Grandmother Libby jerk my hand downward. "Shush," she said sharply. She didn't want me disturbing her funeral. I stopped laughing and we stood silently, side by side, for the rest of the service. I never grieved Libby's departure because she didn't leave. I didn't tell my family about this experience for 30 years. I didn't think they would believe me. Now that we are all becoming multisensory, it is not necessary to wait 30 years before sharing experiences like these. They are multisensory perceptions. We can't see anything that is not physical with our five senses. Almost everything is non-physical. That is why becoming multisensory is life-changing. It allows us to see what is non-physical as well as what is physical. Everyone's life is now changing in this way. We are becoming more aware of intuition. We have more to pay attention to. The businessman didn't have to stop before the last ramp, but he saved himself a lot of trouble by doing so. The woman did not have to attend the conference, but she wouldn't have met her colleague, and his cancer might have taken a different course if she hadn't. There is no single way to experience intuition. It is different for everyone. Do you know anyone who is exactly like you, who weighs the same, has the same color hair and the same length arms? Even if you have an identical twin, does he get sick when you do and like the same foods? Does she like the same music? That's not possible because each of us is different. The same is true of intuition. Some people have hunches. Some get ideas. Some people hear music, and others see pictures. Some people get sensations, like the feeling of a crisp winter day. Others hear words. Some have conversations, as I did with Grandmother Libby. Some have combinations of these. None is the correct or the only way. You can find your way by paying attention to what is happening inside you. This is the biggest difference between five-sensory perception and multisensory perception. The five senses require you to pay attention to what is happening outside of you. Intuition requires the opposite, that you pay attention to what is happening inside of you. Using intuition. The water was emerald and turquoise green, so clear that I could see each grain of sand beneath my feet. It gently lapped a beach that stretched as far as I could see. There were no surfers here. There was no surf. Linda, my spiritual partner, was floating face up with only her nose above the water. I knew what she was doing. With her ears beneath the surface of the gentle ocean, she was listening. That is why we came to the beach every day, and why we came to Maui during the winter. To float in the healing water and listen. I joined her and listened too. The first thing I heard was my breath. But when I stopped breathing, I could hear faint sounds. First, a soft clicking and noise like sonar from a ship. Then a chirping noise. If I hadn't been listening so carefully, I would not have heard anything. When I took a breath, I couldn't hear the sounds anymore. But when I held my breath again, they were still there. They were often there, but I'd been to Hawaii many times before I took the time to listen for them. I stood up. A school of dolphins was passing. "There they are!" I shouted to Linda. They were jumping out of the water as they swam, like children playing in the sun. I felt happy watching them, and it seemed to me that they were happy too. It was very exciting for me to see the dolphins so close, but Linda and I had come to listen for something else. I put my head back into the water and held my breath again. A low-pitched sound, like a melody from the moon, or a great moaning in the ocean, filled in the spaces between the sounds of the gentle waves breaking on the beach. Then other, higher-pitched melodies, and more lower-pitched voices joined in. It was like listening to a symphony from space. The humpback whales were singing. I didn't know how far away they were because sound travels so well underwater, but it didn't matter. I could hear them clearly. These great creatures that swim the oceans like hometown neighborhoods were back. No one knows exactly what their songs mean. Some people think they are a language that the whales use to talk to each other over thousands of miles. Others think they are music. Some think they are both. To me, they are reminders of the greatness of life, how little I know about it, and how special it is. We floated and listened until we were full of the mystery and richness of their melodies. Then we left, already looking forward to coming again the next day. Listening to your intuition is like listening for the whales. It's there, if you take time to listen for it, and if there isn't so much noise that you can't hear it. I couldn't do anything about the ocean. It was calm most of the days we came to listen for the whales, but it isn't always that way. Once we came to Maui after a storm, and the waves were taller than I am. When that happens, I can't even get in the water. Days later, even when the waves were much smaller, they made too much noise for me to hear the whales. When you are angry, your emotions are like huge waves on Maui during a storm. You cannot hear your intuition. When you are sad or jealous or vengeful, you can't hear your intuition either. These emotions are too turbulent. Trying to hear your intuition when you are upset is like trying to hear a friend on the phone when people in the room are dancing to loud music or cheering a ball game on the television. Your friend is speaking, but you can't hear her. Even when you can't hear, Your intuition is always telling you things that are helpful. Sometimes you can hear it even when you are agitated, like the businessman. But if you are trying, you can hear it more often. Imagine hearing your intuition every moment. You can do that, but you have to train yourself. First, don't go to bed angry. This may take some work, but it's worth it. Your intuition works best when you feel light. Anger is heavy. It's a big load to carry. If you have it on your shoulders when you go to sleep, it will still be there when you wake up. When you let your anger go, you lighten up. That's when you open up, too. The same is true for every painful emotion: regret, guilt, shame, jealousy, and all the rest of them. Let them all go before you sleep. Second, clean up your diet. Alcohol, caffeine, sugar, and tobacco cause violent storms in your body. The less you use them, the better your inner weather becomes. Meat and poultry are bloated with hormones, antibodies, and chemicals. None of them is put there for your health, and none of them is healthy for you. Eat fresh and light, and that is the way you will feel. Everyone is becoming multisensory, not just vegetarians. But why not make it easy for yourself while you're learning? Third, believe that you have intuition, and believe that it works. This is very important. You can't stop your intuition from working, but you can keep yourself from hearing it. Believe that when you ask a question, you always get an answer. The answer may not come when you think it should, or in the way that you expect. It may come that night in a dream. It may come the next day, or the next week, in a conversation with a friend. You may have to take a walk or drive into town before you can relax enough to hear it, but an answer will always come. Last, listen to what your intuition tells you. A lot of people hear answers that they don't like, so they pretend that they didn't hear any answers at all. This brings us to a very interesting question. If your intuition can give you answers that you don't like, where do those answers come from? Non-physical teachers. The Stockholm airport was smaller than I expected. Within minutes, I was through customs and looking into the smiling eyes of my host, Jan. "Welcome to Sweden," he said, beaming as he greeted me. "Our car is waiting." As I settled into the back seat for the long ride, he talked excitedly. "They are all here. Saab, Volvo, SAS, the phone company, the banks, every major industry. This will be the best conference I have ever created. I am so glad you have come. We are all looking forward to your talk." I was not. I could barely keep my eyes open. The long flight had been exhausting, but not so much as the month before in the desert. I struggled to stay awake. My life was upside down. I had no idea what I would say, or even if I would be able to speak. In 4 hours, we arrived at a small, elegant hotel surrounded by woods in central Sweden. "I have a surprise," Jan said mysteriously. "I want you to meet the inspiration for this conference." Before I could say anything, he took my co-presenters and me to a small room. At one end, a middle-aged Swedish man sat in a chair. After greeting us through an interpreter, he closed his eyes, seemed to go to sleep, and then suddenly opened them again. His appearance had changed, and so had everything about him. "Welcome," he said through the interpreter. "I am Ambrus." Ambrus was not the name of the man who had closed his eyes. "Oh, no," I thought. "I am too tired for this." I had seen channeling on television. I was not impressed. I did not believe in non-physical beings, and I didn't want to listen to one, even though I had watched Grandmother Libby's funeral with her 20 years earlier. The next day, Jan approached me at breakfast. "You can speak with Ambrus any time," he said, smiling. I took him up on the offer because, although I disdained non-physical beings, I didn't want to miss the opportunity to experience one close up. When I saw Ambrose again, only the interpreter and I were present. "How did you learn to interpret your dreams?" Ambrose asked me. I was shocked. How could Ambrose know what had happened to me in the desert? Yet that is exactly what I had done. Ambrose knew everything. The pain that had driven me into the desert, and what I had experienced there. He knew what I had seen, and how it had affected me. I made another appointment with him, and another. Each time we talked about my experiences in the desert, which I had not been able to explain, even to myself. "A flame has been ignited in you," Ambrose said, "but it is a small flame in a very large place, like a cathedral. You need to feed the flame, or it will go out." "How do I feed the flame?" I asked. "You talk to people," he replied. "But Ambrose," I exclaimed, "that is what I cannot do. If I talk to people, I may lose what I learned." "Yes, you may fall," he said softly, "but if you do not feed the flame, it will go out anyway. You must talk to people," he repeated. "The love that you give to them is the love that they will give to you. That is how you feed the flame." "Can you do that?" he asked, looking into my eyes. I thought for a moment. "Yes," I said, "I will try." "Take my hands," he said, holding them out to me, "and I will be your witness." I learned later that the conference was on decision-making. I still did not believe in non-physical beings, but the only person who understood what had happened to me and what was happening was just that. I continued to question everything about Ambrose and to look for tricks. I asked during our next meeting, "Why can't you talk to me directly? Why do you need an interpreter?" "I can," replied Ambrose, "but could you hear me?" I am grateful for my skepticism, because it left no doubt in me that whatever Ambrose is, he is wise and he is a friend. Ambrose was the first non-physical friend that I met, but he was not the last. Do you stop meeting friends after you have met one that is special?
Of course not.
I didn't either. Having friends is the greatest joy in the Earth School. Becoming multisensory allows you to have more of them. It's like moving from a small town to a city. There are many more people and, because of that, more friends to meet. Not everyone meets non-physical friends the way that I met Ambrose. Some can listen better than I could in Sweden. They do not need channels, much less interpreters. Everyone experiences non-physical friends in his or her own way. Some people hear voices. Some feel a presence. Others see pictures. We usually think that hearing a voice, feeling a presence, or seeing pictures that others cannot hear, feel, or see happens only to people who are not well. When everyone was five-sensory, that was natural to think. Now everyone is becoming multisensory. There are still people who hear, feel, and see things that others cannot and who are not well. The difference is that these people do not take responsibility for themselves. They think they must do what the voices inside them say. This is a very big difference. Non-physical teachers do not tell you what to do. They help you see your options. They help you think through your choices. They help you understand what you are feeling and why. They help you become more loving. They guide you to the fullest use of your life. You are still the boss. You still decide what is best for you and what is not. You may talk a decision over with friends, but when it comes time to make it, it's up to you. That's the way it is with non-physical teachers. They are friends who share with you. Then you decide what to do. Everyone has a non-physical teacher. The more your life influences other people, the more non-physical teachers you have. A person who lives in a remote village does not require as much assistance as a person who influences millions, such as Mother Teresa or Gandhi. The more people your life influences, the more assistance you have available to you. Having non-physical friends is now a part of being healthy, not sick. As you become multisensory, you will meet non-physical friends in your own way. Try this for a start. When you are about to say something or do something that you are not sure you want to say or do, ask yourself, "What is my motivation?" You will always get an answer. You may not like the answer you get, or get it when you expect, but an answer will always come. Then you can decide for yourself what to do or say. This is how non-physical guidance works. You ask, then you listen, then you decide. When you check your motivation, you automatically engage non-physical guidance. It's that simple. Try it and see what happens. When you do, you will discover that you are experimenting with something very, very big. Non-physical reality. The minivans pulled to a stop in front of the building. Doors swung open and out poured children, their teacher, and an assistant. Like flowers, they colored the sidewalk, laughing and talking. "Come, children," the teacher said. "The professor is waiting." Up the stairs they went, through doors, and into a room where a kind-looking man sat behind a table. "Welcome," he said stiffly. The long-awaited talk with a real scientist had begun. "What do you do?" asked a boy in a blue shirt. "I study radiation," answered the professor. "What's that?" asked the boy. "That's light," said the professor. "Like from a flashlight?" asked a girl in a yellow dress. "Yes," said the professor. "And more. Light that you can see is part of a continuum." No one knew what to say. "Do you know what a continuum is?" the professor asked. They all shook their heads, "No." The professor took off his glasses. "It's something that doesn't have a beginning and doesn't have an end." "Then where does it start?" asked a small girl with blonde hair. "Well, that's the point," said the professor. "It doesn't start and it doesn't end." No one said anything. The professor tried again. "A continuum is a spectrum. Who knows what that is?" "It's red, orange, yellow, and blue," said a boy with glasses. "And green and violet," added a boy beside him. "It's a rainbow," shouted a little girl. "Exactly," said the professor. "A rainbow is a spectrum, but it is only part of a bigger spectrum." Again, no one spoke. He tried a third time. "Violet is at one end of the rainbow, isn't it? Violet has a lot of energy. That means it has a high frequency. Take my word for it." "Red," he continued, "is at the other end of the rainbow, isn't it? Red doesn't have much energy. It has a low frequency." Everyone was listening. "But some light has a frequency that is even lower than red. It's called infrared." "That keeps the chickens hot," squealed a little girl. The professor knew that she was thinking about her neighborhood deli. "Exactly," he said. "And some light has a frequency even lower than that. There is always light with a lower frequency. It's part of the whole spectrum, too." "Are there other parts?" asked a little boy. "There are always other parts," said the professor. He held up a picture of a rainbow. "This is the part of the light spectrum that you can see, but the whole light spectrum is bigger." "How much bigger?" he asked no one in particular. No one could say. "Bigger than you can imagine," he answered himself. "It goes past red in this direction," he said, pointing his finger to the right, "forever." "It goes past violet," he continued, pointing his finger in the other direction, "forever. That's what the whole light spectrum would look like if you could see it, which you can't." The professor had hit his stride. He was no longer the stiff man behind the table. "When I turn on a television," he said dramatically, "where does the picture come from?" "From television waves?" asked a girl with glasses. "Yes," said the professor. "And where are those waves?" In this room," said the little girl again, hesitantly. "Exactly," said the professor. "Exactly." That is the way it is with non-physical teachers. They are in the room, too. Your eyes can't see television signals, but that doesn't mean they aren't around you. If you could see everything that is around you, you would see much more than your eyes can see. The light that your eyes can see is part of the whole light spectrum, and that spectrum doesn't have a beginning and doesn't have an end. The universe is like that, too. It doesn't have a beginning, and it doesn't have an end. Everything that your five senses can detect has a beginning and an end, but the universe doesn't. Now we are becoming able to see a little more of the universe. This is multisensory perception. It's like being able to see above violet into ultraviolet and below red into infrared. We are beginning to see past the limitations of the five senses and into non-physical reality. That is why we are becoming aware of non-physical teachers. You can't see television signals until you get a television, even though they are in the same room with you. Non-physical teachers are always in the same room with you. Becoming multisensory is like getting a television. Everyone is getting one now. It allows you to become aware of non-physical teachers. It also allows you to become aware of something else. Your soul. When a fleet of ships sets sail, one of them sets the course for all of the others. It is the heart of the entire fleet, no matter how many ships are in it. Setting the course for the fleet does not mean determining what happens aboard each ship. The many interactions on each ship unfold in their own ways. People discover problems, and they work them out, or they don't. They support each other or not. On some ships, the journey is generally pleasant. On others, it is always difficult. Imagine that the mothership is the largest seagoing vessel that you can picture in your mind, larger than the biggest ocean liner. It is an enormous city afloat. Imagine that the rest of the ships in the fleet are small boats, each with enough room for only one person. The mothership is your soul, and you are one of the small boats. You do not have the information that your mothership has available to it. It is traveling on a vast ocean. You are temporarily part of its fleet. It was sailing before you came into being, before you were born, and it will continue its journey when your life is done. Yet your mothership knows everything that happens to you. It knows every difficulty that you encounter and how you handle it. It knows when the sea is calm for you and when it is rough. In a way, you are a miniature of the mothership. Although you are tiny compared to it, you are able to draw upon all of its capabilities if you are in communication with it. When you are in touch with your mothership, you have another, much larger perspective to guide you through the storms of your life. There is a reason that you are at sea, and a reason for the storms that you encounter. You cannot see those reasons, but from the perspective of your mothership, they are clear. You must make each of your decisions and experience what each of them creates. Your mothership will not override your authority. Yet why flounder in high seas when you have a mothership to assist you? It will not pull you out of the water, but it can help you to see things that you cannot see by yourself. Your mothership is the reason you are at sea. You were not forced to be a sailor. You volunteered. Through the decisions that you make, your mothership itself is changed or not. Your mothership has its own destination. It always sails toward harmony, cooperation, sharing, and reverence for life. When that is your destination too, you are coordinated with it most effectively. If you sail in an opposite direction, you can lose track of it completely. Then you do not have your mothership to help you. It was designed for the long haul. You were not. Your purpose is to learn how to sail most effectively with your mothership. We are each small boats with a mothership, sailing on an ocean without a beginning and without an end. The small boats are temporary. The motherships are not. When your life ends, you stop being a small boat and become your mothership. That is what you were before you became a small boat, and that is what you will be again. While you are a small boat, your job is to learn how to travel in the same direction that your mothership is sailing. You are not the first small boat that your mothership has put into the water, and you may not be the last. In short, you are part of a grand voyage, even though you, yourself, can see only a part of it. When you become your mothership again, you will see much, much more of it. Meanwhile, your mothership is always attempting to communicate with you. It does not communicate with satellites or computers. It uses your intuition. This is the same system that you use to communicate with non-physical friends and teachers. Your intuition is like a radio that can receive signals from different stations. Some are non-physical teachers. Others are fellow souls. Another is your own soul. Communicating with your own soul gives you a glimpse of the most fulfilled, wise, compassionate, and intelligent person that you might become. This is the person you would be if you used all of the wisdom that you have available to you, and all of the compassion that you have in your heart, all of the time. It is you without any of the limitations of anger, fear, jealousy, doubt, sadness, vengeance, shame, or resentment. It is what you would be if your life were filled with love and joy. This is your higher self. Think of it this way. When you first learn to play basketball, you are not as good at it as you can become. The more you practice, the better you get. You make more of your shots. When you get very good, you make most of them. You may never get good enough to make every shot that you try, but you can imagine what that would be like. That image is drawing you toward itself, the image of a player who scores every time she shoots. Your higher self is like that. It draws you toward itself. It is all that you can become. It's where your life wants you to go. When you communicate with your soul, your higher self is calling to you. This is called the higher self experience. Your full potential calls you. You feel the possibilities of what you can be, and that helps you become those possibilities. Some people actually become their higher selves. They live their full potential each moment. They are delighted with life. They are in awe of life. They think, speak, and act consciously. They care for life. They are in communication with their souls continually. You cannot tell where they leave off and their souls begin. Sometimes this is called enlightenment. Sometimes it's called waking up in your life. It's also called authentic empowerment. It is wanting what your mothership wants, doing what your mothership does, speaking what your mothership speaks, and sailing where your mothership sails. This is what you were born to do, to become your higher self, to communicate with your mothership all of the time. In order to do that, you have to go to a special school. The Earth School. The Creator gathered all of creation and said, "I want to hide something from the humans until they are ready for it. It is the knowledge that they create their own reality." "Give it to me," said the salmon. "I will hide it on the bottom of the ocean." "No," said the Creator. "One day they will go to the bottom of the ocean, and they will find it." "Give it to me," said the bear. "I will take it into the mountain." "No," said the Creator. "One day they will dig into the mountains, and they will find it." "Give it to me," said the eagle. "I will take it to the moon. They will never find it." "No," said the Creator. "One day they will go to the moon, and they will find it even there." Then Grandmother Mole rose. Everyone became quiet. They knew that, although she has no physical eyes, Grandmother Mole lives in the breast of Mother Earth and sees with spiritual eyes. "Put it inside them," she said. "It is done," said the Creator. Now we have discovered the secret. Using multisensory perception requires looking inside yourself. How could you ever find this secret with your five senses? You couldn't. They are designed to look outward. Everything that they detect is outside of you. Even when your body hurts, it hurts because of something outside of you, like some food that you ate, or a hammer that hit your finger. Eating different food and keeping the hammer away from your fingers solve the problems. This is how we have learned to solve problems. The five senses provide information about things that are outside of you. You think about that information and then act differently. Maybe. If you don't, you keep creating the same consequences, like hurting your finger. When you make the connection between the hammer, your finger, and your pain, you change the way you do things. Now that we are becoming multisensory, we have information about what happens inside us as well as what happens outside. Insights and hunches become part of the picture. If you take into account only what happens outside of you, you are not seeing the whole picture. Have you ever been to a movie that is so good you forgot that you are in a theater? You cry and scream or laugh. The suspense or the sorrow is unbearable. You are carried away. If you were a student of cinema, you would look for things while you watch the movie, like how the story unfolds, which scenes follow which, and what camera angles are used. The Earth School is a 3D, full-color, big-screen, multimedia, interactive movie. Getting carried away is easy because it is intimate, exciting, and always changing. If you study this movie, The Earth School, like a student of cinema studies movies, you see that nothing in it is accidental. Everything happens for a reason, just as it does in a theater. This movie is your life. The more you use your intuition, the more you see how it is constructed and what it is telling you. Each morning, a young man jogged past a small house. Each morning, a small black dog charged toward him, barking loudly. It didn't attack him, but it made a lot of noise. One morning, as the dog lurched toward him, barking loudly, the man thought, "You spend a lot of energy trying to prove that you are bigger than you are. Why don't you relax and enjoy yourself?" A few steps later, another thought came to him. "Am I the one who spends a lot of energy trying to prove that I'm something I'm not?" That thought changed his life. He is still grateful for it. Now he looks forward to the little dog charging toward him, barking. These kinds of thoughts are multisensory perception. When the young man got angry each morning, he was carried away by the movie. When he realized something about himself that changed his life, he began to see the movie differently. He became a student in the Earth School. Multisensory perception allows you to study the movie, your life, while you are starring in it. It also allows you to see something else. You are the director of your movie, too. You decide what words to say next. You decide how you will respond to each scene. You make the movie intense or fun, boring or exciting. You play a helpless fool or a wise hero. When you realize that, your life becomes very interesting to you, no matter what is happening. During World War II, the Nazis put a man named Viktor Frankl into a concentration camp. They did the worst things that you can imagine to him. They killed the people that he loved. They tortured him and took away everything that he had. He worked in the bitter cold and slept on boards in a frozen barrack. There were so many people on the boards that no one could even roll over. He had just enough food to starve slowly. How would you like to be in that movie? If you were the director, how would you have Victor finish the scene? This is how Victor played it. One morning, his work party was stumbling down a rocky road in the dark. In the icy wind, while the guards were shouting and hitting them with rifle butts, Victor realized something that changed his life. He realized that his highest goal, the ultimate goal he could reach for was love. Victor did not become a victim. He did not hate his persecutors and belittle himself. He did not say, "Why me?" or "This is unfair." When you say those things, you have no power. Victor stepped into the greatness of his soul. Instead of making the star, himself, into someone who hates, vows revenge, or collapses in humiliation, he made him into a hero who strives to love no matter what. This is one of the best movies that I've ever heard about. I hope that I can make my movie as good as this one. Do you think you can make yours this good? Your movie began when you were born, and it will end when you die. In between, you play the starring role and direct the action. Your movie doesn't exist apart from the movies of everyone you know and everyone you will ever meet. Each of them is also starring in and directing his or her own movie. You set the stage for them, and they do the same for you. That is how the Earth School works. When you see that you are the director of your movie, you see that you choose everything in it. But what about all of the terrible and painful things that no one would ever choose, like being tortured in a death camp? What about being born with a crooked spine or abused as a child? How do they get into your movie? How do they get into anyone's movie? Reincarnation. The clouds are Father Sky's gift to Mother Earth, said the old man. Slowly he raised his arms above his gray head, looking toward the sky. When the clouds are full, looking directly at me, he said, they open and rain falls. When your mother was full, she opened and you fell to the earth. This is a story about a raindrop, like you. This raindrop landed in a meadow. Then it joined other drops and they became a trickle. That trickle became a stream and the stream became a river. Then the river flowed into the ocean. The sun smiled on the ocean and some of the water turned into mist. It rose toward Father Sky, where it became a cloud. When the cloud was full, it opened, and another raindrop fell to Mother Earth. It was not the same raindrop, but it came from the same ocean. Then it began its journey back to the ocean, too. I heard that story when I was a young boy. He smiled. Then he offered me a cup with some water in it. Water is holy, he said as I drank. We are all made from the same holy stuff, like the clouds, the raindrops, the rivers, and the ocean. The stuff that we are made of is life. Some people call it consciousness. Some call it love. Others call it spirit. Non-physical teachers are made of the same holy stuff. You and your soul are made of it too. The story of you and your soul is like the story of the ocean and the raindrops. Before television was invented, people listened to the radio together. Some radio adventures took months to tell. Each episode was part of a larger story. For example, the hero gets knocked over a cliff. On the way down, he grabs a root growing out of the rocks. Using all of his strength, he pulls himself onto a narrow ledge. Then he looks up and sees a grizzly bear coming toward him. This is where the episode ends and the next one begins. New things happen in each episode, but only some of them get resolved. The hero almost dies, but finally, he's okay. Other things don't get resolved. What about the bear? Each episode ends with, "To be continued." Your life is like that. It is the latest episode of a larger story. Your birth was not the beginning of a new story. It continued one that began before you were born. You picked up where the last episode left off. The last episode ended with a death. That is how episodes begin and end in the Earth School, with a birth and a death. In the Earth School, the hero talks, acts, and dresses differently in each episode. In one, she is a Mexican mother with 8 children. In another, he is a Chinese peasant. In yet another, She is a German nun. It doesn't matter what role the hero plays. Each episode is still part of the same larger story. That is the story of your soul. In the Earth School, an actor who betrays someone in one episode also plays a person who gets betrayed in another episode. You always experience what you create. If you don't experience it before you die, before the episode you are in comes to an end, you experience it in another episode, another lifetime. In the East, that is called karma. It is also called reincarnation. The two go together. That is how things that are so painful that you would never choose them get into your movie. They are carryovers from the last movie that you made, the last episode in the story of your soul. That movie, like the one you are in now, is part of the story of your soul. Your five senses cannot see that story. They can only see the episode that you are in now. If you could see all of the movies that you are in, you would look at the life that you are living now very differently. As we become multisensory, that is exactly what is happening. A higher form of reasoning. You have not taken a course that is required for your second year, said the dean, frowning across his desk. Fear tightened Jennifer's stomach. How can that be? She asked. I've taken everything I was told to take. Maybe so, continued the dean, but you haven't taken a course that you need for next year. Can I take it with my second year courses? She asked, more nervous now. You could, he said. But this course isn't taught again until next summer. I'm sorry, but you will have to drop out of school until you complete it. You can begin again the semester after you do. That will be more than a year, she exclaimed. I understand, said the dean, but the rules are the rules. Jennifer tried not to cry when she left the dean's office. All of her energy, money, and focus had gone into becoming a nurse. Her ex-husband didn't think she could do it without him, but she had been admitted to nursing school. She questioned whether she could do it with her young daughter still at home, but she had finished the first year. She had begun a new life for herself, but what could she do now? She went to her advisor's office. Why didn't you tell me about that course? She asked. I made a mistake, he said, upset with himself. I'm sorry. Jennifer dropped out of nursing school. A month later, a speeding car hit her aging father, broke some of his ribs, and changed Jennifer's life forever. Sometimes, when she visited him at the hospital, he recognized